Greetings and welcome to the brand new show, The Horror Times Visions of Horror, with your host, it is I, Baron Craze, a complete psychotic to some people and the true horror historian to the rest. Now, I know you're going to say, whoa, what? I thought this would be Baron's Crypt. No! Our Baron's Crypt shows go off on Friday nights. That's our kind of standard way, if you would. And this show is The Horror Times Vision of Horror. Now, what makes this show so interesting, and let me just give you a little background here. First of all, the horrortimes.com page is not owned by me. I am the editor, yes, but I am not the owner of the site. The owner of the site wanted to roll out Visions of Horror for a while, and we went back and forth on the format of this show. And one of the biggest things that came down to first was, let's just have two shows a month, and we'll put them on the Baron's Crypt. This is the entire argument. And I said no to both. And I gave reasons. And the reasons are really simple. You're talking about having me discuss 15 to 16 movies in a show. It's only 3 hours long, and that doesn't work out right. I can't really express myself about the films. Sometimes one film may be, you know, pretty quick because it maybe wasn't that good. And then another one may be fantastic, and I want to spend 30 minutes discussing the movie. Now, the second thing is, I said, according to the Baron's Crypt, everybody is used to what the Baron's Crypt is. They know the show, they know the format, they know everything, right? I said, by introducing this as Visions of Horror, it's going to get people really confused. Visions of Horror is on the Horror Times. Therefore, the show should belong to the Horror Times. And this took a little time to sink in. And I was all set to do the show this past week. And, well, we had a little hiccup in my personal life. And this relates back to the Baron's Crypt, and this is how we get around to this. I have a very good friend named Robert. Robert loves to discuss, how should I put it nicely, B-movie movies. These are the, and when I say B-movie movies, I'm talking B-movie horror films. You know, TNA is a lot of times shown in it. It's not a schlock movies or exploitation types. It's just, you know, B-movies. Or basically, as some people like to put it, the boob movies. Right. So, you don't know whether they're going to show the boobs or they're going to be showing people just screaming, boo, because it's so bad. So anyway, we were all set to have him on the show. And the entire show was just going to be me and him talking the entire show. There wasn't going to be any kind of news or anything else onto that Baron's Crypt show. But what happened? Well, what happened was, sadly, Robert had a massive heart attack. Well, that's what I like to call it. The doctors had some other kind of name for it. Anyway, I get the call because I was emergency contact. I rushed to the hospital. They tell me what's going on. So, you know, of course, I authorize it. You know, medical insurance and all that's there for them. Anyway, the show basically, you know, didn't go off, obviously. And there was nothing to put in its place. And then I was still at the hospital, really kind of back and forth, if you would. Waiting rooms and walking around the entire hospital. And it's amazing. At certain times of the night, you can really get to a lot of interesting places in the hospital. As long as you put a mask on, you're free to go. Anyway, it knocked out the Visions of Horror premiere show. Again, the show was already built. It was done. It was ready to go. But, you know, there was a couple little fine points to put on in there. And I was like, you know, I just don't. No one knew where I saved the file to. There was all these little hiccups. Because I got some new people staying with me now, and they're not up to speed on all the things I do. So anyway, and the main thing was, I usually upload the show, and of course, I didn't upload the show. I didn't even have it saved to be uploaded. Nothing. So a lot of people didn't know what to do, so the show didn't go off. On Sunday, finally got, you know, word from the doctors and everything that, yeah, you know, they had the surgery. The first kind of 24 to 48 hours is really that we were living in a gray area of life. And hey, look, he's going to mend up, but he's not going to be ready to do a show anytime soon. And I'm not even going to bring it up to him. I'm not even going to, hey, you owe me. No, I'm not doing any of that. So here we are on a Tuesday night doing this particular show. And the reason I didn't wait another week or something is I just want to roll the show out, introduce it to you, the fans out there, so you guys get kind of used to it. We might decide to do this show live. That may become a thing that might happen. That I think would be pretty cool that way. If you've seen these movies that are on the Visions of Horror, that'd be great. But the problem that I also have is these films are not going to be listed on the site. Okay, they don't get listed until the end of the month, so it's very difficult for people to know in advance. So, again, we go back to the owner going, "I want a live show." I said, "What's the point? People won't know the titles until I start talking about them. I'm not releasing the films I'm watching each day or such. I could probably do that. I just have to find another 15 minutes or 30 minutes of my day to get that done. And right now, I don't have that kind of time." So here we go. All right. And I'll be really honest with you all. In probably the next time we do the show, the format's going to change. So this format, it was a kind of a rough one I came out with. I think in the future I'll have a little better one. So, look, somebody once told me this, and they really made it really simple. They said, "Listen, the biggest thing you got to do in life with your show is just get it done and roll it out there. Just get it out there. It may be the worst thing you've ever produced in your life. Just get it out there. That's all that matters with a podcast. Just get it going." So, here we are. The Hard Times Visions of Horror, episode number one. All right, so what is Visions of Horror? Let's step back in time to understand how this even came to the forefront. And we got to go back to where the owner of the site came up with this column. And look, it's not a bad column. A lot of people like it. We get a lot of hits on it. We get a lot of emails in about it too. So how does the Visions of Horror work? Okay. The entire month is planned out by friends, fiends I know, people I consider a friend, I guess. Maybe they get suggestions from somebody else. Quite possible, some of these titles that are on these lists. But the biggest thing that happens is that they put down the films. And then see the list, and I see what I have to watch each day. Now, sometimes I do watch more than one horror movie a day. And sometimes that's a movie I've seen maybe countless times. But it goes on the list. And what happened was last year, I didn't know that. Okay? So what it looked like was, wow, Barrett only watches one horror movie a day? No. I didn't put down the ones that had already seen and reviewed because I just didn't do that. And that's not what people wanted. They wanted to know really transparency of what I'm watching. I don't know why this is a big thrill for people, but it is. And also the fact that at the end of the year, a lot of people come up with a list of films they've seen. I've seen 500 movies, or I've seen 666 movies. That's great. That's wonderful for you. But then when you look down that list, you start seeing something that's pretty familiar, if you would. I watched all the Friday the 13th movies, or I watched the full Hellraiser franchise, or Nightmare on Elm Street, or Halloween, or, I don't know, Witchcraft, which was an interesting series. I think they topped out around 16 episodes of it or something. The point is, they would put all these films down on the list, and that's what you did. So the first indication was, hey, all the films on the list, you review them all. Oh, God. I already knew that was a problem. With everything else you want me to do, you want me to somehow squeeze into my schedule reviewing over 30-some films a month. Great. So that didn't work out well for 100 reasons. So I started figuring out, and so did the owner. I said, it's not fair. I can't watch all the movies, but I would like to discuss the films. Hence, the podcast show for Visions of Horror. I know you're saying, so Baron, let's get this straight now. You are now producing your eighth show. Yes, that is exactly what has occurred. And I know you're saying, oh God, Baron, you just are a glutton for this. And yes, that is very true. I am a glutton for this kind of punishment. So that's what happened last year. You know, we did that. This year is now bringing out the podcast and doing reviews. And I mean, there's a lot of movies. And I've looked ahead, if you would, because, you know, I can, because they submit me the whole month in advance. And I know you're saying, well, wait a minute, what happened to January? January, I just have to get the article up. I have new people here who are posting for me, and there's been a couple foul-ups and a few things. So I got to show them how, I guess, the dashboard section of WordPress works, so they kind of understand, hey, this is your new job, and this is what you got to do. So that'll probably be up probably tomorrow night. That should be up, along with a few other things that somehow just slipped through the cracks. They're in draft modes, but they just haven't rolled out. So all that'll be taken care of on the Hard Times. Also with the show, it allows me to give you slight updates about the site too, and not overburden on the Baron's Crypt, which is just a show that is, once you get back to the roots on that show, of discussing horror movies, horror news, and that sort of thing. So that'd be great to kind of separate them too. So, let's get into it. First film I saw this past week was, let's see here, and of course, I didn't put dates on stuff, right? I usually put dates on everything. I didn't do that. So it would have been Monday the 31st. I know you're going to say, Baron, what about Sunday? I don't know. I didn't start with Sunday. I started with Monday. I know I probably screwed up the work week already, and I'll probably fix it next week. So don't worry about it too much, guys, okay? Again, we're rolling out the premiere show. So on January 31st, which was a Monday, I watched a film called, oh, God. And again, majority of these movies, I'm not picking them. So here we go. Exorcism, The Possession of Gail Bowers. This came out in 2006. In fact, it was released actually on January 31st of 2006. The film is 91 minutes long, so hey, it's not that much of your time. However, it only got a 3.7 out of 10. So what is the film basically about? Oh, here we go. A priest is in an undisclosed part of Florida and is called upon to help exorcise Gail Bowers. I think the title told you everything about the movie. Gail's possessed. We're going to need an exorcism of Gail, and Gail's last name is Bowers. Okay? I mean, there you go. You can't get more complex than that. Hey, what's the movie about? I think it says it all right in the title. I mean, it's just where you are in life. So the director and the writer was Leigh Scott. Done films like Piranha Sharks, Dracula's Curse, and The Beast on Bray Road. Now, I should state right here, when we get into the people who acted in this film, if you went and looked at the cast of these movies, you're going to see a lot of people overlapping. It's like, okay, you're taking the page out of John Carpenter, where he would use same actors in his films. Great. But there's a point when you want to start expanding that pool a little bit. But it stars Erica Kressler as Gail. And then we got Noah Thurman, Griff First, who's done a lot of horror, Thomas Downey, and Michael Tower. See if I can give you some. Oh, here you go. Now you may say, why did this film come out? All right. Basically, a certain studio, which we will mention in just a moment, wanted to capitalize on the success of The Exorcism of Emily Rose that came out in 2005, which is a far superior film to this mess. Oh, God. All right, so who was the production distribution company? It was The Asylum. Yeah, that tells you a lot. If you know your horror, you know when I say the word asylum, you should be just cringing, shoulders should be shrugged up, your neck should squeeze down, and you should just be really unhappy with what you gotta watch. Not a lot that's going to be positive here. Now, the film does reference a few films, namely The Entity, from 1982. I really like that movie, by the way. And there's also a book on it, too. So that film was really good. Far above what this film, Gail Bowers, was. Basically, uses a little bit of a hint of the covers being pulled down by themselves. Now, we've seen that, in Paranormal Activity and a few other movies where the covers are being pulled down by themselves. But really, I think it's the entity from 82 that really kind of brings that forth. Now, as also that film has the appearance of something of an invisible force holding onto the woman's arm, both in Gail Bowers and in the entity. However, when you really get down to that invisible hold, if you're kind of asleep and there's that invisible vice-like grip onto your wrist or your arm, that really actually dates back to The Haunting from 1963. And I know people are already going, Baron, when are you going to review that movie? You talk about it a lot, man. It's an anniversary type of film. I got to give it all the props and everything else, and it's going to roll out in, well, that would be 2023. So you got to wait another year. All right, then we got the film Stigmata from 1999. Basically, you have a couple connotations that the girl doesn't really believe in God. So that is kind of happening in the film. Now, again, Stigmata is a wonderful movie. It is really powerful, impacting type of film. This Gail Bowers movie is not that either. Then we've got, when I was talking about the same actors, well, we got similar characters being worked in from basically like the same company. Now, when I say the same company in this sense, you got, you know, with trauma films or trauma films, you got Traumaville and those sort of things. Well, here's like Blackthorn Industries, and they're pulling that kind of name and characters from Frankenstein Reborn and also Dead Men Walking, both from 2005. So I guess you can already tell my opinion of the movie, right? What are we talking about here? We're talking about, we got basically the first half of this movie. It's manageable. It hasn't sunk itself down there. Now, as for the deaths, well, they occur in no random direction or no random reasoning for any of them. It's time to drop a body kind of thing. Oh, we've been having the movie on for about 10 minutes. Drop a body. Okay, we've gone about 15 minutes. Drop two. Okay. I mean, that's just how it's done. It's really, you know, oh, drop one here, put one there. Here's one, there's one. You know, it's just what it is, okay? There's a little bit of an implied conservative Christian agenda. The possessed girl is rebelling against parental authority, or really in this case, they're the step parents, if you would. Telling her, you know, how to run her life and how to be a good person, and you got to go to college and you got to get this and you got to get that. And, you know, well, obviously she becomes possessed because she's using the Ouija board, and this is all factoring into her life that, oh, it's not good in any way. The couple things I look there is that, and a lot of people go, oh, you got to go to college, you got to go to college. No, you can go to trade school. I mean, have you ever looked at the trades? I mean, these people make some serious buku kind of money per hour. I mean, it's not cheap in any way. When's the last time you found out that the plumber coming out to your house is going to be charging you $85 an hour? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Best course of action? Don't talk to the plumber while he's there. Just let him work. You know, I mean, it's expensive. But again, here, it's always the same. If you rebel, that means, you rebel against this. That means you're evil and you're going to go to hell. And I always look upon that, and I actually have to go back and look at history. Go, so let me get something straight now. We rebelled against the British Empire. So when we did that, were we then casting ourselves against the Lord? No, we were going for the Lord. Ah, just one of those little parts of hypocrisy again. Okay. You know, we got a lot of the, we got some memorable jump scares going on. For some reason, a lot of people want to call them jump shocks. Jump shocks? What? Who are you people out there that are coming up with these terms, new horror and jump shocks? No, it's a jump scare. Jump shocks never work. It's not a, not only doesn't it work, it sounds stupid. Just leave it as where it was. I'm sorry you didn't come up with the term. I didn't come up with it either. But a jump scare sounds a lot better than a jump shock. So anyway, there's a scene basically where we have it really mirroring the Exorcist from Exorcist Part 3, I should say, from 1990. And if you're curious which one, where we have the figure who's got the big shears that comes out across the screen suddenly to the nurse. Everybody right now has got to be thinking, oh, yes, that is a really good kind of jump scare scene there. So, yes, there's a lot going on there. So that's pretty cool to have there. There's a bit of a kind of trashiness that it does go into that is available. But, you know, if you're expecting The Exorcist, you're not going to get it. It's not there, so forget about it. And, you know, I know they're remaking The Exorcist. I know it. So just, you know, keep that one to yourselves, guys. Nothing I can do about it. All right, so let's move into our film for February 1st, obviously Tuesday. This time around, it was The Skull from 1965. This is a 83-minute-long film. The Internet Movie Database puts it down at 6.3. I think that's a really fair assessment. Came out on August 25th of, obviously, 65. A tagline for the film is pretty simple. When the skull strikes, you'll scream. Ooh. Okay, so first of all, let me tell you this much. That Gail Bowers film, if you are into your streaming services, you can find that on the 2buyTV.com page. The Skull, right now, can be found on DailyMotion.com. I know you're saying, Aaron, you're telling us where to find the film. Yes, I am. I know some people out there go, oh, I don't like that. Well, guess what? Yes, you will in this situation. All right, so next up is for this, the director was Freddie Francis. The screenplay is by Milton. No, I'm not going to get this name right, so I'm just going to spell this one. It's Subotsky. It was based on a short story called The Skull of the Marquis de Sade by Robert Bloch. That name should be familiar to some people out there because he's the author of Psycho. That's right. Psycho pulls itself in all kinds of places, doesn't it? All right, so the cast has got Peter Cushing in there, Christopher Lee, Patrick Weimark, and Jill Bennett. Really good cast of people here, really is. You know, let me tell you a little bit about the film, obviously. And you know, like I said, it's got a good rating to it, and I find the film, you know, to be very entertaining. It's got a lot of a gothic element dripping through the entire film. But basically what we have here is a, how should I put this? A low-level, scrupulous kind of fence, if you would, offers Christopher, a professor of the occult studies, a skull, which is got a reputation to be the Marquis de Sade skull. A fellow collector who once owned the skull warns that this particular one possesses an evil spirit. The spirit still inhabits the skull and emerges on two nights of the new moon, traditional nights of witchcraft and devil worship. As the new moon arrives, Chris finds himself being possessed and driven to acts of murder by the skull. Now, just to let you know, who plays Christopher, that was Peter Cushing. So you don't think it's Christopher Lee because of the Christopher. So I'm just going to throw that out there. production company was Amicus Productions. Now, there you guys know automatically that that is going to be a really big shot in the arm that's far, far superior than the Asylum movie that was released from the previous movie. So you got Amicus, and Amicus really does deliver it. As for distribution in the U.S., it was Paramount Pictures that didn't... How should I put this? 5 years before this film came out, Paramount Pictures was in the frame of mind that we didn't want to put out films that were not worthy of the quality. We wanted to keep things in a nice, above-board manner. Yeah, right. So, you know, when Psycho made the money and Paramount went with, oh my God, look at that. It made money. They kind of changed their tune about horror really fast. Just a little note there. Now, a little bit of trivia for you all. According to the director, Freddie Francis, the screenplay by producer Milton was a little more than just a basic outline. A great deal had to be added during filming and later in post-production to bring it up to an adequate feature-length film. So isn't that wonderful? You're the director. You've been hired to do this movie. You get the script. You start going, well, let me start figuring out things and get a shot list together here and see what the set designer is going to need. You open it up and you realize, oh my God, there's nothing here. This thing is in a 1,000-piece problem here. I got to start figuring out the stories. And you just realize, okay, I need a bottle of wine or some hard liquor and something to bang my head against because this is going to be a true problem for everyone. As for in my opinion on the film, obviously the producers wanted to basically recapture the lightning in the bottle, so to speak, from the terror, Dr. Terror's House of Horrors from 1965 also. And they clearly set out to do that process again, being something from the Hammer films around that time. They wanted to capture that element, bring that forth, and say, look, they did it, we did it too. Because you have to understand, Hammer films and Amicus are going head-to-head at that time. They're two gothic type of production companies. It always makes you wonder, what would have happened if the two companies would have merged together, or at least entered into a partnership? What started actually happening with the films, and I should note this here, is that Amicus would not try to release their movie the same time as Hammer did, but rather stagger it. And why is that so significant? Because that's similar to what happened with two musical bands, both that were from England, and that was the Rolling Stones and the Beatles. They didn't want to be in a head-to-head competition because they knew the fan bases. It was either a fan base that went for the Beatles and the fan base that went for the Bad Boys. So Beatles were the good boys and the Rolling Stones were the bad boys. And either way, they wanted to always stagger the releases so they weren't, you know, going in a head-to-head competition and eating up each other's bottom line. So that was always cool. This was obviously the same thing. You had Hammer to one side and Amicus to the other. Instead of going in at on top of each other, you basically made a deal, if you would, to be staggered at the box office so you weren't gouging each other's bottom lines and not getting anywhere for anybody. So there you guys go. Now, obviously, I do recommend this film. I should pause. I recommend it, but it's a difficult recommend. Now, you may say, wait a minute. What? Okay. You see, look, it lacks a real, true, proper script. You have to understand that this script was thrown together at the last minute. And basically, if you're, you know, Christopher Lee or Peter Cushing fan, you're going to watch the film, okay? I understand that. But you might want to, you may just go, well, I watched the film, but I'm souring on the poor performances. But the film has a lot of visual aspects to it. It's very intriguing, if you would. And if you are a person who enjoys powerful cinematic presence and elements that come from the screen, then this is the film that you should watch. Also, you would want to watch this from a director standpoint, if you're aspiring into that, of what to do and how to function, if you would, when you're giving a script that you suddenly realize isn't a full script. It's a very, very rough outline. So if you took that to an understanding, you probably got a treatment in your hand that's 25 pages long, but you need to come up with basically another 70 some minutes of everything else. So you got to get that all figured out. So in those aspects, the film is very good to have. Now, that's something you want to have, because, you know, Freddie Francis, his films and his style and the visuals really, you know, excel because it's hard to do. He's got such a flimsy kind of story outline. He's not handed something that's of strength. He's handed something here where the bridge is about to collapse because somebody forgot to put, all the bolts into it, and it's just sitting there. But anyway, it does give you a bit of understanding of the true talent of the cast. And then, of course, the wonderful abilities of the crew to really excel where they need to. So I would say that, you may say, well, Baron, do I watch the film or don't I? Again, I gave you the reasons why you should. Why you wouldn't want to watch the movie is if you're going to base everything off of just a pure script format, then and storytelling and such, then yes, it's not going to be for you. But you gotta go with one with the other. But let me stress this one point out, because this often seems to get left on the cutting room floor, if you would. And there's only not a lot of films do this. There's only been I think the Mortuary Collection did a DVD or a Blu-ray extra for this one. Very important person that's on a film, set designers. Set designers sometimes get the permission to go into, say, like a, I don't know, I'm just going to say, an Amicus or nowadays it would be, say, a Paramount prop shop. And you're going in there and you're signing out all these different things you need to make this set look really gothic and such. If you're an independent filmmaker, you sometimes wonder, where am I going to find all these things? And I only can give the set designer, I don't know, $3,000. And you say, wow, that's a lot of money. Depending on what that set designer's got to decorate, it may not be a lot of money. A lot of times, you go into flea markets, you're going to go to an antique shop to find something. Maybe you need something as the MacGuffin element to be put into your film. It's difficult, but in this film, the set design is really spot on. It's really got a lot rich, gothic tones to it. I'll be honest, if I had a really, old kind of house, like a true Victorian type of home, I would definitely take one of those rooms and decorate it as Peter Cushing's type of office, because it would really pop with all that going into it. So there you guys go for that. All right, before we get into our next film here, I do want to take just a moment. I'm going to play a little bit of music. We just got permission this past week for playing Bloody Hammer's music. And one of the first tracks that somebody, I guess, downloaded for me, they thought it was the Twilight Zone music. It's not really. It's a kind of a cover track, I think, of Golden Earrings. Twilight Zone. So we're just going to play it, but in our upcoming shows, we're going to have a little bit more gothic theme to that. And we do have a more gothic theme track, I believe, for later in the show, if everything goes right. So enjoy this. Again, this is Bloody Hammer's Twilight Zone.
Still warm, maybe my connection's
All right, so next up then was The Brides of Dracula. Came out in 1960. It's an 85-minute long film. And there's basically a 6.7 out of 10. You know, I always got a, I don't know, a spot for the vampire films. But then again, I got a spot probably for every other kind of genre of monsters. And that's a pure, we note this, when the Baron's Crypt comes out on Fridays, we are also including now topics for the shows. So whether it be vampires, just for example, vampires would be, I don't know, the vampires of the 60s and the vampires of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and so forth. Not week back-to-back weeks, but spread that out over time. You're talking enough kinds of shows there to last you, oh, who knows, maybe 100. And really can't get bored with it because it's just talking about what we all enjoy, horror movies. All right, so this particular film is directed by Terrence Fisher. The writers, there was quite a few actually on them. One was uncredited, and that was Anthony Hines. But Jimmy Sangster was probably the lead writer on this particular project, which just kind of gives you that gothic sense of horror from what he's always done. Film obviously stars Peter Cushing. Let's see, who else? David Peel, Miles Mollison, and Henry Oscar, just to name a few. There's a lot of actors in this film that you may, a lot of you may not really recognize, but if you're into the classic gothic horror element, then you will definitely get a good sense for the people that are in this film. A lot of them were very good character type of actors, and I've always talked about this on the Baron's Crypt show. When we say character actors, what are we talking about? Character actors is just that. These are people who are in secondary roles, or even roles where they're very good at playing the drunk, or they're very good at playing whatever particular character there is. They're just good at it. And people don't realize that you can make a really long-lasting career in filmmaking if you're very good at a character actor. You're just good at bringing that forth, whatever character it is. The drunk, the villains, the some sort of henchman, maybe you're good at I don't know, a day job of being a fireman or something. So your characters are always somebody involved in that type of atmosphere. Whatever it may be, you're going to be really good at that. You're going to have this longevity in your career. Now, while you say, oh, well, I want to go and want to be the $20 million thing, I really don't know, personally, if we're going to see that really again, those $20 million contracts for actors. I think they're going to actually start to flounder a little bit. If you've ever noticed now, the films are so much CGI work, it's less and less of actor quality being used. I'm just saying, it's my pure opinion. Anyway, this particular movie is a pretty cool film. I've enjoyed it the many times I've seen it. And, you know, before I get into the summary, I should tell you how this film fits into everything. Okay, so first of all, it follows Horror of Dracula from 1958, but then it's followed by Dracula, Prince of Darkness, Dracula Has Risen from His Grave, Taste the Blood of Dracula, Scars of Dracula, Dracula AD 72, and The Satanic Rites of Dracula from 1973, and The Legend of The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires in 74. I mean, it should tell you something. You know, if you're really going to watch this film, you got to watch Horror of Dracula first and then go into this movie. It just works that way. Now, do you need to do that for everything else? Not really. In fact, it's probably not even necessary that you watch the Horrors of Dracula, which I should say you should watch it. Because these films, in a way, kind of all work independently of each other. A lot of times, some of them actually have maybe 3 minutes of the other movie playing out in the beginning of the film to roll it over. And I always find that interesting because if you know your slasher movies, the Friday 13th, for example, would have part of the end of the other movie playing over the beginning of the next film, and here we go again. But look, that wasn't original. It had been started well before that. So it's just those things you kind of pick up on the movies and how they're very interesting. So, and just throwing that out there. So the summary is, when a coach leaves without her, a French student teacher named Marie-Anne is on her way from Paris to the Ladies' Academy in Bad Stein. Excuse me. It is invited to remain the night at the Transylvania Castle, where she is innocently unleashes a vampire. Meanwhile, Dr. Van Helsing, which is played by the Honorable Peter Cushing, has been summoned by a local priest to deal with the bloodsucker. So you get a rough storyline here, and you kind of just go with it. You want Dracula, you want vampires, hey, guess what? Here you go, right? Basically, you know, Christopher Lee tried to avoid this role for a while, but in the end, he did return to it in basically, I think it was 66 with Dracula's Prince of Darkness, if I'm remembering that correctly. You know, it's not bad. The screenplay was rewritten by, like I said, Jimmy Sangster. I think the movie did have a novelization in 1960. I'm looking this up now. Yes, that is true. Novelized in 1960 by Dean Owen. So if you can find this book, you're not finding like buried treasure. Because for I understand, not only is the book well out of print, it is in some circles very expensive to find. So if you do find it in good condition, congratulations, you found a part of the Holy Grail. Production company was Hammer Films. You should know that. Distribution credit was Universal Pictures. Couple of taglines for y'all. The most evil, blood-lusting Dracula of all. And we got, he turned innocent beauty into unspeakable horror. Or, a school for girls falls prey to his fiendish desires. I don't really like that one too much. I mean, you know, the statement here, a school for girls. So now we got multiple girls, but yet our summary just talks about one. So, a little weird there. In the privacy of the girls' school, he sought his prey, turning innocent beauty into a thing of unspeakable horror. Nice, but too long. What did I always tell you about taglines? I have said this on the Baron Script Show many, many times. Taglines need to be 3 to 5 words. Think of your movie poster. Think of the words on the movie poster. Think of that as your limitation. 3 to 5 words. If you make it multiple sentences long, or you put it down and you mostly almost read a log line about the thing, you've gone too far. You've missed the entire point of the tagline. No one can remember that. But if you give them 3 to 5 words, they got a good shot of remembering it. And they even got a better shot if the artwork is really good in today's world of taking a picture of it. I do that a lot. If I find a movie poster, I'll take a picture of it and I'll post it up because I'm like, hey, everybody, here's something that's coming out soon. Who knows whether it'll be good or bad, but hey, there is something on the radar for us all to enjoy. All right, moving right along. Let's see here. We've got House on Haunted Hill, 1999. Obviously, it's the remake version. It's 93 minutes long. Came out on October 27th of 1999. Some taglines for you. You see, I'm changing it up. The other one, I did the taglines further down and gave you the directors. Here I am putting the taglines up front. Again, variation. Until I find that right formula of where everything should go, it's always going to be like this. I'm going to switch it up. So the taglines, evil loves to party. Okay. Six strangers have the chance to make $1 million each. All they have to do is make it through the night alive. Okay. If you're in, you may not want to get out. All right. A little weird there on that one. It's going to be a long night. Okay, that's good. Are you dying to be rich? I like that. That one there, it drives the point home. It goes right for the greed. It goes right for your lust for money. You know, bang. Are you willing? It's basically saying, are you willing to spend the night here? You know, that's what I would have put down as, you know, ready. Are you willing to spend the night here? Okay, so it's 7. But you can play with it. You know, we welcome you to stay. 4 million. You know, something like that. You know, or $1 million. Want to stay? You know, get, you know, you, if you put the money into it, people look at that and go, $1 million to stay. People are always doing this on Facebook and Instagram and every other place. They'll put a really broken down Victorian home and just go, would you spend the night here for $1 million? Most people go with, sure, because there's just one thing when they usually show this. They usually show a house in the middle of a field or something. Great, yeah, I'll spend the night, no problem. I'll spend the night right there in the field. I didn't have to go in the house. You didn't say anything but going in the house. You said there. I'm outside the house. No problem. And then they go, well, that's not what I meant. That's not what you insinuated. So there's a way, right? But in the film, you have to spend the night inside the house. So you have the director is William Malone, the writers. I like how they credit the original writer for the of this film, the Rob White. And then, of course, the updates were done to the film is Dick Beebe, B-E-E-B-E. The film, of course, stars Jeffrey Rush. Let's see, Tay Diggs, Peter Gallagher, Chris Catan, Bridget Wilson, Sampras. Forgive me if I've missaid some of these names. I'm trying my best. And Jeffrey Combs. So obviously, this is a remake of the William Castle's classic movie, House on Haunted Hill, from 1959. You know, it is I don't know if I would say it's a chilling remake. I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far. I would say it's a nice, good, gory, remake. It's got some good elements going for it. You know, you got the 5 strangers. Each are offered a chance to earn $1 million. Obviously, that's updated from the original when it was $10,000. But, you know, you have to understand $10,000 in 1959. You know, and then you convert that into today's money would be very, very advantageous. All right, I took a quick inflation calculator here online. And just to figure it out that in 1959, that $10,000, today's inflation rate would be basically an increase of 858.1%, which would result in about $95,800. So just nearly almost $100,000 there. So, of course, they updated the money to make it into the $1 million mark, which would make more sense for people to relate to. If they can survive the night in the house, which was once an insane asylum run by a deranged and sadistic doctor. But what starts out as a harmless birthday prank soon turns into a night of horrific terror. And, you know, like I said, there are some scenes like that. Now, the production company was Dark Castle Entertainment. This was the first film from that entertainment company, which basically takes their name in honor of William Castle. Now, a couple other films they did, which they had about, they had quite a few, actually. But they did 3 more remakes. They had 13 Ghosts in 2001, which obviously was from William Castle. And, you know, there was that film from 1960. Here they're updating it. Then they have Ghost Ship. Here it's the 2002 one. And, 2002, a year for that. And then lastly, House of Wax that came out in 2005, which was the updated version of House of Wax, which starred Vincent Price from 1953. Just to purely let you know, House of Wax was a remake also of The Mystery of the Wax Museum, just to kind of throw that out to you. So the film was originally done, I think, back in the 30s, and then redone in the 50s, and then redone again. So that film has been done a few times, but each time it's done, it's just been really, really pretty good there. It's been a while since I've seen The House of Wax, the remake. It's probably also something where I kind of block out remakes, because I don't really give a lot into them. There's very few that I do enjoy. But there you go again. You know, as the Baron's Crypt this year, like I said, is doing topics, we'll be doing a topic on remakes. So that could be very interesting with people knowing my distaste for them so much. There'll be that. There'll be, you know, topics on books that then became horror books, if you would, that then became, became movies. So, you know, there's that. So there's a lot of different topics we'll be discussing, not just for the remainder of this year, but like I said, there's over 100 topics easily. So you're definitely looking at something lasting quite a while. And I think everybody's going to like it. So I don't really see there being a format change on that Baron's Crypt show for at least a little while. The distribution company was Warner Brothers. This was then followed by Return to House on Haunted Hill in 2007. They didn't get a theatrical release. I think it went straight to DVD and video, if you would. Obviously, like I said, it's a remake of the 1959 film. It does reference a few movies in there. Some of them were pretty obvious. A couple others weren't. The Tingler from 1959, 13 Ghosts, 1960, The Pit and the Pendulum, 1961, Tales of Terror, 1962, there was a little of the a movie called Spirits of the Dead from 1968. Now, I don't really expect a lot of people to pick up on this one. But if you remember from the film, we had the saturation chamber sequence. And in the sequence, Jan Jennison is shown as a little girl touching the first ball and then a severed head. This is in reference to... Now, this is going to be neat because I had to look this up because it got really deep here. So I'm just going to try to give you a little bit of this because when I write the review for Spirits of the Dead and when I write a review for this film, I'll probably expand more into it. But it's from the sequence in the Spirit of the Dead. So it's a reference to this. So I know that probably didn't really hit a lot of people there, but... The point is, it referenced this film, so it's now something you guys are going to want to go out there and find. I think Spirits of the Dead, since it came out in 68 and everything else, I believe that's going to be an anniversary film, so it's going to be one of those things that probably won't be obviously reviewed this year, but moving into next year, yes, I could see a review for it. Obviously, there's the Silent Night, Bloody Night from 72, the old-school style flashback of a massacre, of a doctor's at the insane asylum and such, you know, is incorporated in there. It's got some music play to it also. Of course, when Blackburn revives Evelyn in the film, I don't know if anybody caught the little scene in there with the needle, because it's bright green and neon green. This is, of course, a send-up to... Reanimator right there. I mean, I thought it was really cool that they did that. A lot of people probably did not see that, did not notice that little element there. But if I'm not mistaken, I really do believe it was green. It might have just been for a moment, but yeah, it brings her back. And no offense, it brings her character back as a bitch who went, who faked her death as a bitch. So, you know, and people would say, would you say that to the actress who played Evelyn? I'll be very honest. If I met her at a con, yes, I would say, you know, your character was a bit of a bitch. And I guarantee you what she would say. Thank you. Not to say, well, I don't really get... No, no, no. She would say this because if she's very honest about her acting in that film, then she would go, I completely concur about that character. And that's what I was saying. Your character was a real bitch. I've said this to other people when I've met them and I've told people about it, I said, well, God, you know, your character was a real ass, or your character was a real bastard. And people go, oh my God, how could you say that? And I said, I didn't say he was, or I didn't say she was. I said their character portrayal gave this off. And if they're a true actor, you know what they say? Thank you. Thank you for being honest. Thank you for being giving the, you know, the truth about that. So many people meet the stars and they don't say it because they're like, oh, I don't want to say that. That sounds so mean. It's not being mean. It's being honest. You're giving them such a huge hit into their ego, sending it upward, going with, that's what I wanted to do. That's what I had to portray. That's what I'm bringing to the table. That's what you want to do. So just put it out there. You know, Jeffrey Rush's character was not supposed to look like Vincent Price, but through makeup tests and a few other things, he just comes off looking like Price. I mean, it really is. And it was just something where the director was like, you know what? I like the look. We're going to keep it and just go with that. So I thought that was very cool. The saturation chamber, like I said, was something that was originally designed and created by Dick Smith, actually, for the film Ghost Story from way back then in 81. But it never made the final cut. For whatever reason, it was just something that was left out of the movie. So, here it is. They put it into the film. They incorporated it. So I thought it was really cool, too. And just to prove that, you know, that the co-producer, Terry Castle, is the daughter of William Castle, who, you know, I said, directed the original movie. There was one thing I wasn't going to, you know, note this, but, you know, when I review the film, I'm going to have to note it, because, you know, you guys know that I go really deep into these movies, especially anniversary films. There's the unethical, psychiatric, methods and experimentation procedures that are performed by Dr. Vanacut, who's the original, you know, the main doctor of the insane asylum, and his staff are loosely based off of the actual medical experimentations conducted by the Nazis. So, I thought, wow, you know, if you got to go for the insane medical procedures, you know where to go every time. You just go back to this one era that it has monstrosities and unspeakable terrors and horrors, and it's just too much to even get into. I'm so sorry. So in the end, you can tell my praise for this film. I mean, I think it's kind of obvious. I mean, yes, I think we all agree that the third act could have been just slightly better if we just dropped away from the CGI. We didn't need all that there. But, you know, I feel the film overall is just it's just fun. I just enjoyed it very much. All right, moving into our last film to discuss for the past week. And that is Dead Snow. It came out in 2009. You can find this film on, it's available on Plex. So if you do have that, you can definitely check out Plex.com. I'm not going to get into the director, the writer, or the cast, mainly because I can't say any of their names without butchering them all. So I'm not even going to get into that. But it's very interesting. We go from one film that had elements of the insane, sick, twisted, hellish Nazi doctors to a film that has also got some Nazi exploitation going on in it, too. So the summary of this film is basically, on a snowbound winter holiday, eight friends unleash a curse that has them fighting for their lives against undead Nazi soldiers. Yeah. So basically, we have the MacGuffin element here, the box, the gold, and how it connects to the Nazi soldiers. Now, I mean, it's a little of a weird thing. I mean, obviously, the Nazis stole this gold. It wasn't their gold by any means. But somehow they are cursed to keep coming back every time someone tries to steal the gold. So it is a little bit weird there. Anyway, so a little more about the film, I should say. The Nazi zombies in this film are a combination of the typical zombies that you would find in the popular culture, plus ancient Norse mythical beings known as, now here's a name for you, Draug. This is basically defined as, and I kind of looked this up a little bit, an undead being who inhabit graves. Often the graves are of important men, and they lead. They're also kind of entrusted, if you would, to protect treasures in them. So basically, they are protecting the treasures if someone disrupts them. So in a way, and it's really twisted if you think about this, it's basically the Nazis who stole the gold are now entrusted never to be resting and to punish those who try to take the gold. So in a way, you know, this gold basically belongs to original people that they stole it from, but the gold was not returned to them and or to their families, I guess, for that part. And therefore, someone comes along and says, ooh, I should benefit from this. Here comes these creatures that make sure that, no, you will not benefit from anything except with your intestines falling out of your body. Basically, it does, the trailer of the film does show some black and white World War II archive footage, you know, includes the battleships and a command room featuring, of course, you know, who from the German leadership department. I'm not even going to say his name. I just don't want to do it. And this material is then not actually shown in the actual film. So it was weird. It was almost like for the trailer, they needed to show some proof of concept. So they showed this and probably told the rest. And they didn't incorporate any of that into the actual film, which is a bit strange. I'm not too sure why they would do that, but maybe in a way it's good that they didn't include, you know, who in that in the actual film. You know, there is a couple references out to the movie Dead Alive in there, especially with all the blood splatter that goes on, the gouging of victims' eyes, things being split in half. Just a really gory kind of send-up to Dead Alive that came out in 1992. And anyway, like I said, the film here, it premieres on DVD on February 23rd of 2010. And let's see here, again, that was 1 year later when the film had been released. It came then out by IFC Films. It was followed up by Dead Snow 2, Red vs. Dead, which came out in 2014. Now, believe it or not, this is kind of important. The Dead Snow 2 is more easily found on many sites out there than the first one. And that's really strange. The first one is very, very hard to find. It is very difficult to locate. But for whatever reason it is, part 2... find it everywhere you go. I mean, there's nothing stopping it. Basically, you know, my opinion of the film is it's got a little bit of the slasher element thrown into it just because of the insane ways that the film goes. Especially, though, it brings in the doomsayer. Now, the doomsayer, if you guys remember, is usually your creepy old guy that gives you a warning about something and then, you know, that's that. We've had the Crazy Ralph ones and such. But one of the first films that had a doomsayer in them, that was The Birds from 1963 with Alfred Hitchcock as the director of it. So yes, there's one of your first early versions of a doomsayer coming in saying that you should be aware of the impending doom. You know, take shelter, take leave, do this, do that. And usually people just ignore that one. So if you're ever out on a road trip or something, and somebody comes up to you and gives you some kind of ominous warning, you know what you do? Hey, be for real. Take them up on it. Because the last thing you want to do is find out, oh, damn, I'm actually in an actual horror movie. Oh, well, this is not going to turn out well. And, you know, you want to have that. So there's that. There's a lot of blood splatter going on. Almost insane amount of action. Comedy. It's just pure It's a gory, gory film. I mean, this is the type of movie that you definitely want to have. You definitely want to enjoy. It's a film that I highly recommend people watch, enjoy for all the blood splatter. There's some good pacing in the film that really leads up to some... That was a weird sound. I don't have any clue what that sound was. It just went off of my computer. None. Not a one. I have no clue what that was. I'm going to pause for a moment. Yep, I checked. I couldn't figure out what that sound was. So that was just one of those weird things in life, I suppose. All right, so that really concludes our show for the first premiere one out there. There'll be another one basically at the end of this week, and that's something that's going to have to usually be happening every week, unless we end on either my birthday or some sort of holiday, and then we'll just have to make it the next show. As for how to do it when we do the cons, we're going to have to figure that out. Also, I have a fundraiser that everybody knows I do for MS. That's going off on March 12th, which is obviously a Saturday. So how that's going to work itself out is probably that the show will be moved to Sunday, so it will go off, because I don't think there's any way for me to do everything on that Saturday, so it'll be near impossible. All right, everybody, so we're going to close out with the artist known here as, I think it's, what is it here? Let me find it. It is going to be Whispers in the Shadows, the artist, and the track is, his name is Legion. And I'm giving the thanks out to Echo Zone for this particular track. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you guys liked it. Leave me some comments. Like us on Facebook under The Hard Times. Go to the hardtimes.com site. Check it out over there. There'll be an entire script outline of the show, of the films that were discussed, pictures, trailers, you know, all that nice information down there for you guys to enjoy. Otherwise, thanks for tuning in to the premiere episode of The Hard Times, Visions of Horror.
Christian Bible, the Gospel of Mark, chapter 5, verse 9. We'll be right back.
Legion, for we are many.